You think about the various characters that are mentioned in the Bible. Probably among all the prophets, one of the ones that stand out is Elijah. We don't know much about his background. We're not told very much about him. He just appears on the scene. He appears in 1 Kings chapter 17 and in verse 1. 1 Kings chapter 17. Starting with verse 1. Now Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the settlers of Gilead, said to Ahab, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, before whom I stand, surely there shall be neither dew nor rain these years except by my word." What a way to start. His name means Yahweh is my God. And he says he's a Tishbite. And that has caused all sorts of confusion. Partly because the Tishbi, the Hebrew word, means inhabitants. So one possible translation, according to the Eastern Bible Dictionary, is Elijah the Tishbite of Tishbi of Gilead. Or another way is it's one of the inhabitants of that particular area. If it is Tishbe, well, it's thought to be located where modern-day Lisbi is in Israel. It's just about 8 miles north of the Jabbok River. On the other, actually, it'd be in Jordan today, but today it'd be in the tribe of Gad. What little we know about him is that he was a rough man. We actually know a little bit about what he looked like. He's described in 2 Kings chapter 1. The one on the board is off. 2 Kings chapter 1. And in verse 7, he said to them, "What kind of man was he who came up to meet you and spoke these words to you?" And they answered, "He was a hairy man with a leather girdle bound about his loins." And they say, "It is Elijah, the Tishbite." The fact that he's a hairy man could either be saying that he had a lot of hair on his body, or it could also say that he was wore a hairy garment. Or it could be meaning both in the Hebrew. It does seem that he set a fashion trend, because in Zechariah chapter 13, at least a fashion trend from prophets, in Zechariah 13, and in verse 4, it says, "Also it came about that day that the prophets will each be ashamed of his visions when he prophesies, and they'll not put on a hairy robe in order to deceive." Prophets were ones who were seen as wearing a garment that was made of coarse hair. And even in Matthew chapter 3, Matthew chapter 3 and in verse 4, when John the Baptist came on the scene, it says, "Now John himself had a garment of camel's hair and a leather belt around his waist. And his food was locusts and wild honey." So just like those who described before, wearing a fashion, Elijah was a hairy man with a leather belt. Prophets thereafter wore hairy garments and leather belts. Because Elijah was a memorial person. Of his words, we know that he was a very blunt man. He started out the very introduction that we have up here, he's condemning Ahab for what he has done in no uncertain terms. And in fact, it was that characteristic why people called John the Baptist of sometimes Elijah, because he was of the spirit of Elijah. John the Baptist was not one to mince words either. He told people very bluntly what it was and where they stood, to the point where some people didn't like it, and that's why he lost his head. But what we do know of Elijah is he comes onto the scene to declare that there's going to be a drought. That drought was brought about by his prayer. We're told about that in James chapter 4 and in verse 17. I got down 4 and it should be 5. James chapter 5 and verse 17. Elijah was a man with a nature like ours. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the earth 3 years and 6 months. Now think about that as far as a prayer. How many, we know that God answers our prayers. But Elijah was a man who prayed, and God answered with a prayer, his prayer with no rain for 3.5 years in response to that prayer. Why would Elijah do that? Why would Elijah cause such distress on the land? They would ask that there be no rain. And the answer to that is the nature of Ahab himself. We have to understand that Israel was in trouble because they had a long series of kings, one after the other, who each got progressively worse. There were a number of overthrows. There were some that were overthrown after they were overthrown, within days, literally, one after the other. They went through a succession of evil kings. And then we eventually get down to Ahab. And in 1 Kings chapter 16, 1 Kings chapter 16, and we're going to start with verse 30. It says, Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. It came about as though it had been a trivial thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he married Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went to serve Baal and worship him. So he erected an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he had built in Samaria. Ahab also made the Asheroth. Thus Ahab did more to provoke the Lord God of Israel than all the kings of Israel who were before him. Think about the reputation that Ahab had. He was so corrupt. He was so evil that God said he was absolutely the worst king ever. He did more to provoke God than anybody else ever had done. And if you look at the kings before him, none of them were good kings. They were all quite corrupt, all quite evil. And when Elijah then appears on the scene, it is because of Ahab's evil that this pronouncement was made. Notice again in 1 Kings 17 and verse 1. Now Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the settlers of Gilead, said to Ahab, as the Lord, the God of Israel is, before whom I stand, surely there shall be neither dew nor rain these years except by my words. That's a strong statement. Elijah stands up before the king and says, I am standing before the living God. And that would be the reason why that drought occurred. As God lives. You know what he was hinting at by that? My God lives, yours don't. The living God is going to cause a drought and you can't do a thing about it. Elijah said he stood before God. That means he is present. See, Ahab had gods that he had to go visit in their temples. You might not see Elijah's God, but Elijah says, I'm standing in his presence right now. He's here. And there was a promise, but he also said it was not permanent. He said, it's by my word. It would end when I say it will end. The purpose of that statement was to prove that Elijah was a prophet of God. Not only just to punish Ahab, But it's a very dramatic statement to say, this is a prophet of God. There isn't anybody else that we could point at and say, because somebody just said, okay, it's not going to rain again until I tell you it's going to. None of us have that power. None of us have that ability. But one who spoke for God would be able to do that. In fact, what Elijah declared was something that God promised a long time ago, back in the days of Moses, in Deuteronomy chapter 11. Deuteronomy 11, starting with verse 13, says, it shall come about, if you listen obediently to my commands, which I am commanding you today, to love the Lord your God, to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that he will give you rain for your land in its season, the early and late rain, that you may gather your grain and your new wine and your oil. He will give grass in your fields for your cattle, and you'll eat and be satisfied. Beware that your hearts are not deceived, and that you do not turn away and serve other gods and worship them, or the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will shut up the heavens, so that there will be no rain, and the ground will not yield its fruit, and you will perish quickly from the good land which the Lord is giving you. Moses warned them in advance, if you stay obedient to God, God's going to take care of you. But if you turn away from God, God's going to withdraw his blessings and the land is going to dry up. And that promise was fulfilled in the days of Ahab. It was fulfilled at the hands of Elijah. While that drought was going on, though, God took care of Elijah. In chapter 17 again, of 1 Kings, starting with verse 2, it says, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, go away from here and turn eastward and hide yourself by the brook of Cherith, which is east of the Jordan. It shall be that you will drink of the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to provide you for you there. So he went and did according to the word of the Lord, for he went and lived by the brook of Cherith, which is east of the Jordan. The ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning and bread and meat in the evening. And he would drink from the brook. It happened that after a while the brook dried up because there was no rain in the land. God hid his prophet to protect him. After all, Elijah said, it's not going to rain again until I say so. You can imagine that Ahab probably would, after a while, want to get his hands on Elijah to make him say so. But God had him hide out into a place. We don't know exactly which brook was being mentioned, other than it was somewhere in the Jordan River Valley. But in some area, Elijah stayed, and Elijah was provided food by God. Eventually, though, that brook dried up because it was a drought. Water was becoming scarce. And God continued to provide for him because in starting in verse 8, it says, then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, arise, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and stay there. Behold, I have commanded a widow there to provide for you. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And there he came to the gates of the city. Behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, please, give me a little water in a jar that I may drink. As she was going to get it, he called to her and said, please bring me a piece of bread in your hand. But she said, as the Lord God, your God lives, I have no bread, only a handful of flour in the bowl and a little oil in the jar. And behold, I'm gathering a few sticks that I may go in and prepare for me and my son, that we may eat it and die. Then Elijah said to her, do not fear, go and do as you have said, but make me a little bread cake from it first and bring it out to me. Afterwards, you may make one for yourselves and for your son. For thus says the Lord God of Israel, the bowl of flour shall not be exhausted, nor shall the jar of oil be empty until the day the Lord sends rain on the face of the earth. So she went and did according to the word of Elijah, and she and her household ate for many days. The flour, bowl of flour was not exhausted, Nor did the jar of oil become empty according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke through Elijah. Again, another miracle. From going on the other side of the Jordan, where somebody might not be able to find him, God sends him way north. Interesting, to the land where Jezebel comes from, the Sidon. And there a widow is told that she will take care of a prophet. And Elijah shows up at her door. And they're taken care of by a miracle again. Food that did not run out until the time the rain came. In fact, Jesus uses this to point out that God is impartial. While Israel mistreated the prophets, God brought benefit to somebody who was not even an Israelite. In Luke chapter 4 and in verse 25, Luke chapter 4 and in verse 25, it says, but I say that to you in truth, there are many widows in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the sky was shut up for 3 years and 6 months, when a great famine came over all the land, and yet Elijah was sent to none of them, but only to Zarephath, in the land of Sidon, to a woman who was a widow. All the places that God could have picked, all the people that God could have benefited, he didn't pick an Israelite because God was impartial. Now notice that Elijah also tested the widow too before he went to stay at her house. The very first thing he asked for was a jar of water. You got to remember it's a drought that has already dried up springs. Water's scarce. But she was willing to fetch him that water. He then asked for food, a little piece of bread. She pointed out that she was down to the last of what she had. They were going to finish that off and then figure they were just going to have to die because they had no more food. He asked for a portion of it first with a promise that God would provide the food from then on out. She believed him. And it was as Elijah had said. Sometime thereafter, trouble visited that household. Starting with verse 8. No, sorry, not verse 8. We're going to start with verse 16. Or 17. Now it came about after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, became sick. And his sickness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. So she said to Elijah, what do I have to do with you, O man of God? You have come to bring my iniquity to remembrance and to give my son to death. He said to her, give me your son. And then he took him from her bosom and carried him up to the upper room where he was living and laid him on his own bed. And he called to the Lord and said, O Lord, my God, you have also brought calamity to the widow with whom I am staying by causing her son to die. Then he stretched himself upon the child 3 times. And called to the Lord and said, O Lord, my God, I pray to you, let this child's life return to him. The Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child was returned to him, and he revived. Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper room into the house and gave him to his mother. And Elijah said, see, your son is alive. And when the woman said to Elijah, now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord is in you is the truth. You know, Elijah must have been a good man. Because when the widow's son died, she thought it was because of her past sins that were being punished by him being present. In fact, this is the first record that we have of somebody who died being brought back to life by a prophet. The widow had proof that Elijah was a prophet, because after all, she had flour and oil that was not running out. There was a miracle right there. But here basically was proof that she could not deny. Here was proof that a man of God was staying in her house and that he spoke the truth. In Hebrews chapter 11 and in verse 35, Hebrews 11, verse 35. In listing out the heroes of faith, it says, women received back their dead by resurrection. It's referring to this point. People who died came back to life by the hands of prophets, by men of God. It was all by prayer. If you take notice of that. Now eventually it came time to face down on Ahab. And in chapter 18, starting with verse 1, it says, now it happened after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, go show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the face of the earth. So Elijah went and showed himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria. It was time to face down. Elijah has been gone. I'm sure Ahab has been beside himself trying to figure out how to stop this drought. He knew it wasn't going to stop until Elijah said so. And the drought had become so severe that basically Jezebel has been taking her frustrations out on anybody who claimed to be a prophet of God. If you read verses 3, it says, Ahab, called Obadiah, who was over the household. Now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. For when Jezebel destroyed the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50s in a cave and provided them with bread and water. Jezebel was going around killing all the prophets. That's how frustrated she was. One of her own staff hid 100 of them in 2 different caves and was providing them food behind her back. But it gives us an idea of what's going on. Now, while looking for grass to keep the animals alive, Obadiah, this same one who has hidden the prophets, runs into Elijah. In verse 5, then Ahab said to Obadiah, go through the land to all the springs of water and to all the valleys. Perhaps we'll find grass to keep the horses and the mules alive and not have to kill some of the cattle. So they divided the land between them to survey it. Ahab went one way himself and Obadiah went the other way by himself. Now Obadiah was on the way and behold, Elijah met him and he recognized him and fell on his face and said, is it you, Elijah, my master? He said to him, it is I. Go say to your master, behold, Elijah is here. And he said, what sin have I committed that you are giving your servant into the hand of Ahab to put me to death? As the Lord your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my master has not sent to search for you. And when they said he is not here, he made the kingdom or nation swear that they could not find you. And now you are saying, go say to your master, behold, Elijah is here. It will come about that when I leave, that the Spirit of the Lord will carry you where I do not know, so that when I come and tell Ahab, and he cannot find you, he'll kill me. Although I am your servant, have feared the Lord from my youth. Has it not been told to my master that I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord, that I hid 100 prophets of the Lord by 50s in a cave, and provided them with bread and water? And now you're going to say, go to say to your master, behold, Elijah's here? Then he'll kill me. Elijah said, as the Lord of hosts lives, before whom I stand, I will surely show myself to him today. Obadiah was not thrilled with the project. It's not that he's just going to tell, oh, by the way, Elijah would like to see you. Ahab has been searching high and low. He's been searching through his country. He has been sending out messages to every other surrounding country. He has been looking for Elijah. Unsuccessfully. For 3.5 years. Now Elijah suddenly shows up. And Obadiah says, he'll kill me. As soon as I tell him that you're here. And worse, God's probably going to go hide you again, and then whatever I'm going to be. Because they're going to get his hopes up, and then it's going to be dashed, and then he'll take it out on me. But Elijah promises that he would stay. And notice that he uses exactly the same description as he said before. That as I stand before the Lord, I'll be here. So Ahab then meets up with Elijah, starting with verse 17. Then Ahab said to Elijah, I want to make sure I got the right place. Yep, 17. Then Ahab saw Elijah. Ahab said to him, "Is it you, O troubler of Israel?" He said, "I have not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have. Because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and you follow the Baals, now then send and gather to me all of Israel on Mount Carmel, together with 400 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah, who eat at Jezebel's table." Notice what Ahab does as soon as he meets Elijah. "This is all your fault. The whole reason we have a drought is because you asked for it. It's your fault." You know, that's nothing unusual. People who follow righteousness are often blamed for the wicked's own deeds. Take a look at Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5 and in verse 10. "Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Here's an illustration of what Jesus was saying. Elijah was blamed for the fact that God was angry at Ahab for his sins. Elijah's just a messenger. Elijah's also one of those type of people that doesn't take it anything like that. He just turns around and says, "No, you're the problem. You're the one who caused all this." And he offers a challenge to prove his point. "I'm running out of time, so I'm going to take this up this evening. We're going to continue talking about the life of Elijah, because there's a lot of events here that we can learn a lot about as far as Christians and our lives before God. One of the things I want you to think about today, though, is the power of the prayer that Elijah has. That he could pray to God and it answered. Also think about the fact that God always provided for his people. Elijah spent a lot of time running for his life, basically. But God always provided for him. One has to have trust that God knows what he's doing. There are going to be times when we're called upon to stand up for righteousness. It's not a time to soft sell what is the truth. There's times when we have to say it out bluntly. And the person who we're telling won't like it. But we also have to trust that God's going to take care of us. Because truth needs to be told. Hope you think about those things. If there's anyone here today who is not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And if there's anyone here who is a child of God, I'd like the prayers of the brethren on behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of the Selector.